The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Adam Schefter with us earlier today. I thought that was an interesting line of questioning there from Andy and an interesting answer from Schefter. As NFL, the 2024 NFL, has not seen a ton of coach firings yet. We've seen Saleh. We've seen Waldron. That's about it. There's a lot of bad teams in the league.
Dennis Allen.
Dennis Allen's another one. Sorry, I forgot about
Luke
him.
Luke Getsy, the coordinator in Vegas.
Vegas, yep. He was shown the door as well. Considering that a third of the league right now, over a third of the league, 11 teams in the NFL are three wins or fewer, is it surprising that there haven't been more coaches shown the door? I'm a little surprised.
I mean, given the debacle in Dallas, I'm still kind of surprised with what's going on there, the way he's mocking his coach with that answer about the sunshine, like, yeah, we know where the sun is when the coin toss comes, too.
Right.
You're mocking your coach. Why don't you just fire him? It'd probably be more respectful to just let him go.
Should have just fired him in the offseason, honestly, right. But yeah.
That one kind of surprises me. I don't know. I don't know how quick I would be to do it as an NFL owner.
Peterson, Daboll, I mean, those are the two-win teams. We're talking about the two-win teams now. Like, they're done.
Like, but what are you doing when you fire a coach? What exactly are you looking for? That's what I don't understand. Like,
what are you looking for when you fire a coach?
Like, what
a new coach to come in and coach them to more than two wins.
Right. To hurt your draft status, which I'll go back to if I'm an owner and I'm forward-thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think interim coaches work. I don't even know. I'd like to go back and look at some of the best interim coaches that
work
become.
Work for what?
I feel like Romeo Crennel takes over in Kansas City or Houston. He keeps the job for a year, and then they realize, oh, that's bad. We fired him.
Yeah.
Like, who's the best interim coach?
Antonio Pierce, maybe? He won five games last year. I know, but he won five games last year as an interim coach.
And guess what?
Now he's the actual coach. But when he was an interim, he was good.
I'm talking about to keep an interim coach.
Oh, who stays on for the next year.
Because sometimes people say they want to promote a guy to see how he handles it, and then they keep him.
Right.
I feel like it never works. Didn't the old guy in Miami do it? Joe Philbin?
Yeah.
I don't know that there's much success because you're limiting yourself to one person.
Right.
Kind of like the Patriots did. Different story.
Yes, Mike.
So I saw on Instagram yesterday that Deion Sanders is actually rumored to be one of the favorites for that Dallas Cowboys coaching
job.
Saw
that as well.
Yes.
So what do you think about that? Because I know we've been doing Bill Watch, and he could be one of the coaches for that too.
I'll tell you, I don't love it for my Buffaloes, I'll say that. But
your Buffaloes are toast.
That's the next step.
I mean, you're absolute toast.
Once his kids graduate, he's probably out of
there. Shadour gone. Travis Sanders gone.
Travis Hunter.
I mean, Travis Hunter gone. Should be Travis Sanders. Mm-hmm. Practically Travis Sanders.
I mean, basically, yeah.
And Deion gone. Mm-hmm. Although, I was reading something. They were trying to fluff somebody else up who's next in the pipeline to replace Travis Hunter.
There's another two-way guy. I forget his name. But yeah, they have somebody else who they think has potential to maybe play two-way. I wouldn't.
What are the chances? That's almost
Deion knows how to market his guys, though. That's for sure.
I know, but they have two-way players consecutively. How often does it happen? I mean, Charles Woodson did it. Like, there's every
Richard Sherman.
Couple decades.
Yeah.
I don't think he was a two-way player. He switched sides.
He didn't play at Stanford?
I don't think he starred both ways. There was a kid at Stanford who played fullback and middle linebacker that was pretty good.
I sort of remember that, yeah.
But I just, Colorado. Colorado just happens to have two-way players back-to-back.
Listen, I mean, there was a time where big men didn't shoot three-pointers. Now they all do. I mean, this is something that could start happening here.
How many years do you think you'll be on suspension or penalties after Deion leaves when they find out exactly how many ways he was cheating.
I hope that doesn't just stick.
Although
with
in
the,
this era, I
with
guess
the team with the school, right?
I guess. Well, if he goes to the NFL, what are they going to do?
Nothing.
They can't do anything to him.
But like Carroll left USC, and I don't remember USC having to pay the.
Well, they vacated the Heisman,
happened, right?
And they
Reggie Bush lost his Heisman. But so what? I mean,
there's a couple other things I think scholarship wide, or I actually think they've lessened those because stuff's so crazy now with NIL and paying players. It's like. What is cheating anymore? What am I really going to crack down on?
That's a good point. Are you surprised that the entire Patriots coaching staff has survived thus far? I mean, I think when you saw Waldron get fired, when I saw him get fired, I remember a month ago thinking, man, this could be it for Alex Van Pelt because things were just stuck in the mud with this offense. And it seemed like the Bears and their offense was humming right along. And now all of a sudden it's a month later, Waldron's out and Van Pelt seems like he's maybe, I don't know, improving a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not surprised that they've kept their jobs. I thought there was a question in time whether Ben McAdoo could take over play calling on offense right. Or even Gerard Mayo could take over play calling on defense. I think those were legitimate conversations to have. I don't think there was ever a chance of firing because I think if you're Robert Kraft, you got to be really careful with how you handle things. The way you set this up, you're coming off the most stable situation in history with Bill Belichick.
Yep.
I don't think you can flippantly look like, oh, now they canned Alex Van Pelt halfway through his first season. And I'm starting to wonder, is it possible that we see this whole staff just back, or at least the significant members of the staff, the coordinators and Mayo are just all back in the same roles next year? Because I would have bet against that.
Is it possible? Yes, absolutely.
Likely?
It's possible. This is the Patriots. They love people they already know. They don't let anyone go, you know? Like, Robert Kraft, for better or for worse, if you know him, if you're part of his circle, he'll keep you around. Maybe not in the exact same role as everybody,
yeah.
But will they all still be here? I say there's a high chance of that, yes.
Because that will surprise me.
Unless either May or Mayo, in maybe reverse order, either Mayo or May comes to them and says, you know, it's not working with this guy, and I would prefer if we went a different direction with somebody. Yeah, someone would have to get shivved. If it's up to Kraft and just him and looking at what's here and everything else, I think he'll stick with what's going on right now. And I don't think that unless someone comes up and, you know, shivs a VP or Covington or one of these as Springer, somebody like that, I don't think you're going to see much change. I don't.
I would have pushed back more against that about a month ago. I thought a month ago you were headed down a road that it was almost a certainty at least one of the play callers would be replaced. And I don't discount it. I mean, I'm predicting them. They might get blown out on Sunday. And if you start to get blown out, if you get blown out by the Rams, blown out twice by the Bills, let's say, and have maybe one other bad loss in there over the final stretch of games here, that could change the perspective again.
Yeah, they got the Chargers who are looking pretty solid.
So I don't totally discount it, but I'm feeling more and more like maybe they will. And maybe they'll be – Curran and Phil Perry have both thrown out I don't want to call them pot shots, but they've been kind of critical of the wide receivers coach.
Yeah.
I feel like he's a guy that could be a scapegoat. And to be fair, Gerard Mayo in his introductory press conference for all the coaches said, I'm probably going to replace some of these guys by next year.
Mm-hmm.
It's unlikely that I nailed all of these hires the first time.
But if we're talking about just the main guy, the coordinator,
I think they might
like
be back.
I could see them being back.
I do leave the door open, though, for AVP to stick around. I've said this all along, and I kind of like the idea.
QB coach?
As May's guy.
Yeah.
No, he could stay offensive coordinator, just like he was offensive coordinator in Cleveland.
Okay.
They gave him the title. He just didn't call plays. And I don't discount the idea they could bring in Kevin Stefanski to run the offense, and you could have actually the same setup as you had in Cleveland. He just won't be the head coach. He'll be the assistant head coach, offense, play caller, whatever you want to call it.
ESPN today put out a list of the top 10 rookies at the 10-week point.
Drake May!
You ready for this? Number one is not Drake May. I bet you can guess who it is.
Probably Jaden Daniels.
Jaden Daniels,
boo.
Number one. With his stellar numbers. He's he might be a top 5 QB in the league right now, Jaden Daniels.
All right, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves.
I don't think we are. If you think,
what do you work for, Jaden Daniels brand?
No, I'm telling you, he's in the MVP conversation. He's a top 5 quarterback in the league statistically right now.
Talk to me in December.
Number two, who do you think it is?
Number two rookie, Jared Verse.
How about Brock Bowers, Las Vegas Raiders?
Yeah. He might break the record. He was on pace to break like some of Puka Nacua's records from a year ago.
He's 7th in the league in receptions. In the whole league, receivers, everything. Not
I was
just tight
wrong
ends.
On him.
He's in receiver for all of that.
I've never loved him, and I was wrong on him.
Yeah. I don't know what record he's up for, but yeah, he's
chasing
right
Puka Nacua's receptions record.
Receptions record. Okay. Well, there
for
you go.
For a rookie.
Number three is Jared Verse. You were right about that. Number four, Malik Nabers. Number five, Marvin Harrison. Number six, Zach Frazier, center from the Steelers. Where the hell is Drake May?
I don't know. Quinyon Mitchell is number 7.
The cornerback, right?
Corner in Philly.
I like him.
Number 8, Brian Thomas Jr.
I like him.
Wide receiver in Jacksonville. Number 9, Drake May. And I think that that's, when you look at who didn't make the cut, Joe Alt is 10th, by the way. Bo Nix didn't make the cut.
Shouldn't.
Despite the fact that he's won more games so far and has pretty good numbers.
Mr. Wins over here.
He's got about 2,000 yards, 10 touchdowns, 6 picks. I mean, that's, you know, that's not bad. He also
more picks than Drake.
4 rushing touchdowns. He's played more games. Bucky Irving didn't make it. Ladd McConkey didn't make it. Caleb Williams obviously didn't make it. And Braden Fisk, Cooper DeJean, guys like that. So
Fisk is Jared Verse's running mate.
Yes.
That's part of that defensive front that I think is going to have this offensive line is going to have a week.
Now, that's a good draft.
Yeah.
Okay? The Rams had a good draft. They have guys who are contributing right now. They have a potential defensive rookie of the year. They have 2 potential defensive rookies of the year right now.
Yep.
And they hit on a couple of different things. Now, that's
after drafting the best rookie receiver in the history of football last year.
In the 5th round?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
there's a reason they were laughing at Bill Belichick a couple years ago.
Yeah.
They knew he was running off the rails, and they were about to hit their stride.
It certainly is. And Drake May and the Patriots are going to have to go up against that defense and those rookies this Sunday. 617-779-7937. We'll continue with our Patriots discussion. And we talked to Brian Scalabrine earlier today about the Celtics' tough loss to the Atlanta Hawks last night in the opener of the NBA Cup. We'll revisit some of that. But first, here's Stiz.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first 3 orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
To tell you what's trending. That was Scal with us earlier today talking about the Celtics' woes, and they don't have a lot of woes, all right? They're not a woeful team like the Patriots or, you know, whoever. They are a good team that is going to get nitpicked. I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. You're going to get nitpicked. You're that good, and you got 3 losses already. You're going to get nitpicked, especially when there's an undefeated team lurking out there that you have to play in less than a week. You play them your next NBA Cup group game. That's against Cleveland. That's next week, next Tuesday, when you will see them for the first time. Maybe they'll still be undefeated. Maybe they won't be, but they'll likely still have a better record than you, and I think that that's significant. So if they're going to turn this thing around, Cleveland's maybe not the team to do it against because they got some solid bigs there with Mobley and Allen and guys who can really box out and get rebounds and dominate the boards. But you don't need Mobley and Allen to out-rebound these Celtics. These Celtics have not been crashing the boards much lately. It's been reflected in the not only the numbers, but also, I think, in some of these wins. How'd they win that game last night? Okongwu goes up there and he taps it in.
Yep.
3 seconds. I mean, that's it. It was offensive rebounds. They were getting killed on the offensive glass. And that's not something that a championship team with a red-ass coach like Joe Mazzulla should be tolerating. I'm sorry. You can't be letting that happen. You can't just shrug your shoulders and say, oh, yeah, well, we got beat on the boards again by the Atlanta Hawks or by the Bucks or by whoever. These other teams who are inferior to you pretty much in every demonstrable way. And that's defense, that's boxing out, that's a lot of things that go into it, but for the last 4 or 5 games, it's been a real problem for them.
It absolutely has, and I don't know that I have a pure answer, because I do think it's funny that Scal talks about, we talk about rebounding, and I did it to start the show. Like, I do think rebounding is tied into effort. Maybe not as much as defense is, and he's certainly right that the whole follow your shot, crash the boards yep. thing that you hear from youth and high school and college coaches isn't really an NBA type thing, and the way everybody plays and 5 out and all those it's just different. It's a different game. But it needs to be better. You can't get out rebounded the way they did. You can't get out shot the way they did
yeah.
and consider yourself an elite team. And I don't know if it's effort. I don't know if it's lineup. I don't know. I mean, he didn't really say, yeah, Porzingis will fix that. Because I think you kind of posed Porzingis as an opportunity, and he didn't really jump on board with, as soon as Porzingis is back, this will all be cleared up. And I agree with him. I don't think it's necessarily one guy.
I don't think so either. I don't think height is their problem.
Right.
They got Luke Kornet. He's tall. I mean, that's not, you know, if they were just worried, well, these other guys are taller. That's not what's going on here. They're getting outworked. They're getting outpositioned, things like that. I mean, and some of it's luck. I mean, some of rebound is just luck where the ball bounces. Who knows? That was sort of a lucky tap in last night, but still.
But some of it's not, too.
Some of it's not.
Yeah. Dennis Rodman, like, there was a reason he was a good rebounder. It wasn't just luck. His ability to, you know, jump quickly, go down, come back up, tip the ball. There's an art to tipping the ball to yourself sometimes. There's an art to tip outs and, you know, in modern basketball where it is sort of five out. You slap it out to a teammate in a certain spot. Like, there's different ways to do it, but they got to figure it out. And I do think it's a little symbolic. You know, the old Tommy Heinsohn, you look at maybe fouls. And that's how you judge a game. Well, if you look at rebounds, I think generally the team that hustles more and is more physical has more rebounds. Like, just superficially.
Yeah.
I didn't see the game. I just saw the box score. if you got out-rebounded badly, I'm going to say you didn't play with great energy and you didn't play with great physicality. And that might be symbolic of a team that's not fully invested in what they want to do. I'll tell you, the Celtics right now feel like, you know what they want to do? Stand out and shoot threes.
Yep.
Stand out and shoot threes. Like, even Tatum. Scal was talking about that. Didn't love Tatum standing out there shooting threes. He wants him to drive and work his game inside out at times. And I just think that's who the Celtics are. And I think they have to be careful living up to their coach's philosophy to the point where other people say, well, I know how we're going to deal with that, and we're going to beat you. We're going to let you play your game because we think we can beat you with a different style game.
Yeah. Jason Tatum, by the way, passed Tommy Heinsohn last night on the all-time Celtics scoring list. He's now 12th. To get into the top 10, he's going to have to eclipse 13,188, which is how many points JoJo White scored in his career. Tatum with 12,196 points at the age of 26 could rocket right up this list, I'm telling you. I mean, if he's here for seven more years, you could see that happen. JoJo White, Dave Cowens is ahead of him. Russell is eighth. John Havlicek's the all-time leader at 26,000. I don't know if he'll get there or not, but, you know, Bird at 21,000 is in his sights, I would say. I think that's certainly a possibility. Parrish, McHale, you know, these are some other things. So Tatum, in terms of scoring, I think, just because you happen to mention Tommy Heinsohn, I thought I'd put that one out there. But generally, I would say that he's a guy. Jason Tatum's a good rebounder. Like, he's been a good rebounder in his career. He's not Jokic or anything like that, but he's been one of their most consistent guys rebounding, and I think some of this starts with him. He's not been shooting the ball as well, which we talked about, and the rebounding just hasn't been there. Now, I think this is stuff that's going to fix itself eventually, and I do think the Celtics will go back to their, not that they went away from it really, but winning ways, and these three losses are things that we're going to look back at and be like, yeah, remember, it was a little bit of a shaky start when they go off on a long run. However, ESPN power rankings are out. Guess who's not number one anymore?
The Celtics, and they shouldn't be.
They have dropped down to number two.
That's it?
Cleveland Cavaliers, who were at 3 last week, have jumped up to number one at 12-0. They'll probably be 13-0 after tonight. The Oklahoma City Thunder at 9-2 dropped from 2 down to 3 to make room for the Celtics, I would imagine. And rounding out the top 5 is Golden State at number 4. They went up a spot at 9-2. And then the Nuggets, who jumped up from 11th to 5th. With a 7-3 record, and that's got to be basically on the strength of everything that Jokic is doing. He's been out of his mind lately.
MVP.
And, playing like an MVP for sure. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. Right now, we are going to go behind the glass like we will be doing here in the 5 o'clock hours going forward. We had a quiz with Stiz last week, and today, here comes Big Mike for a What If Wednesday. What If Wednesday. You want to explain this one to Andy or Stiz? Someone else want to break this down?
This is a behind the glass segment.
Go ahead.
So we all collectively came up with. Okay, you can stay in there, Mike. It's called What If Wednesday.
Yep.
And so I have went around the building and I've asked, you know, anyone I could find, give me a what if scenario. It could be anything. It could be
doesn't have to be sports either,
related.
Right?
Yeah. It could be historical related. It could be pop culture related. So we have this bucket. We will keep this bucket going, and we'll ask you guys to choose one for now each, and we'll all talk about it as a group, and we'll see if we get some funny and interesting answers.
So I have a quick question.
Okay, yes.
That maybe was an off-air question, but I'm going to ask it on air. Are we going to allow listeners to take part?
Now, I think that would be a great idea to let listeners, they can contact me at StizGrimy on all social media if you have some funny what-ifs for the guys. I think that would be great for listener participation,
yes,
as well as employee participation as well.
Because we don't want to see them on text to us.
Yeah.
Because the whole idea is kind of do it on the fly,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So if you have ideas for What If Wednesday, don't just text them in, because then it defeats the purpose, because we'll read it, we'll see it.
Yeah, send them right over to me and I will put them in our What If box.
So can I be first? Can I be the first? I haven't looked at it yet. Have you looked at yours?
I didn't even get one. Are we both getting one? I thought it was just one.
Yeah, no. One each.
One each.
Go ahead. You can let Arcane grab one. But don't open them at the same time. So if Andy goes first, Andy open yours first,
so
and then
look.
We'll go.
Okay, I won't open
mine. Okay. And I read it out loud, okay?
Yes.
What if the Red Sox didn't come back against the Yankees in 2004?
Well, if the Red Sox didn't come back against the Yankees in 2004, then I think not only would John Henry and Tom Werner and all of them gone even crazier the next offseason. I mean, they traded Nomar. Mm-hmm. That may have been, if they didn't come back and they traded Nomar, people would have looked at that move like it was the worst thing ever. They would have looked at that and said, I can't believe you traded Nomar. That's why you lost. They, in the year prior, I mean, that was the Aaron Boone, Tim Wakefield thing. So I think that move would be looked at with much, much more scrutiny. What else? Manny Ramirez would have a totally different. David Ortiz may not have ever taken off as Big Poppy. I mean, that could have been a chain of events that changed the entire course of the baseball fandom around here and everything else. I mean, that turned players into legends. People still know Curtis Luskanik's name because of that. That would have had a major, major ripple effect. But I think the first thing that popped into my head when you read that was people would look back at the Nomar trade and they would say, that was why you lost. You lost because you traded Nomar. I can't believe you did that. What a terrible move. How stupid can you be? And now you're never going to win anything. And that's, I don't think they never would have won anything. I mean, they still had Pedro and Ortiz and Ramirez and all those guys. They had a good team. But the Nomar trade would have been super scrutinized to the point where that could have gotten, you know, guys fired. That could have, a lot of things could have come from that. Theo Epstein, that was his thing. You know, Theo is this young guy trading Nomar Garcia Parra out of here. That would have been a big, big problem and could have changed the entire trajectory of really everything that happened after that, not just with the Red Sox, but all throughout the city. That started all these owners being competitive with each other.
Yep.
And Danny Ainge talked about it. He's like, yeah, once the Patriots won, then the Red Sox won, there's pressure on us, pressure on the Bruins, all these things. It all would have been not completely wiped away because the Patriots still would have been good, but for the Red Sox, they were the long-suffering team. They were the ones that needed it the most, and if they didn't get it there, I don't know what would have happened, but it wouldn't have been pretty, and the Nomar trade would have gone down as an all-time bad move.
Absolutely. That Nomar trade, because a lot of people love Nomar in this city, and I think that would have changed the view of that trade. I also think it's hard to know, would it have catapulted them toward more aggressive team-building, spending, maneuvering, or made them question it. I don't know. Like, the Ortiz factor is definitely in there. I was trying to look at free agents. Like Carlos Beltran, I believe, was a free agent that following year. Do they sign one of those guys? Is there somebody like that where they're like the next big thing, got to add something, the next big fish to try to get over the top? And I definitely think it changes the aura of the city. And who knows what comes moving forward with sports. Now, the Patriots are still winning, right? I'm assuming the Patriots are still winning. I don't know if you can say the Red Sox caused the Patriots to not win, sort of thing.
I don't think you can say that, but okay, yeah.
You know, so I think the Patriots are still a dynasty, and they're the only show in town, so to speak, and there's an interesting factor there. I still think the Red Sox and this ownership group would have been aggressive, but if you don't achieve it, and like Dave Roberts doesn't exist.
Yep.
Right? He doesn't exist.
Right.
Maybe he's not the
I mean, he exists, but he's not, you know, that whole play didn't happen and all that.
Butterfly effect.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's not the manager of the Dodgers.
Could be.
Maybe they don't have two World Series now.
Yeah.
Because I'm a big believer in the butterfly effect.
Me too.
That matters.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have a Dave Roberts diving bobblehead thing.
That's true.
That a very nice man at Fenway
Which,
gave
thank you.
You.
Shout out to my guy Tom over there at security station, who was so good to us all season long, but also made a point of holding one of those Dave Roberts bobbleheads.
It's the only time I've ever seen you happy. I've been working with
true.
You 2.5 months.
Might
it's the only time I've seen you genuinely happy.
Might be the only time I ever was happy.
Okay.
All right. This is a good one for Andy Hart. Andy, I can't wait to hear your answer to this.
I don't like it. I feel like I'm being set up.
What if Tupac and Biggie never got murdered?
then they'd still be alive.
That's true. They would be.
How the hell should, like, that is, go ahead. This is your segment, apparently.
No, well, you got to answer it.
I'd answer it. They'd still be alive.
I know they'd still be alive.
The rap game would be better than ever.
I don't know about that, but what's the butterfly effect? You can't think of any, the butterfly flaps its wings, the guy misses Biggie, it misses Tupac, and they continue on making music. You don't think they would have had a butterfly effect on music at the 90s?
Maybe.
I think it definitely would have.
Doesn't this also tie into the current Diddy scandal somehow?
It does.
Oh, of course.
You know, I was listening to...
See? Save myself.
I was listening to... I forget, it was Big Pop. I was listening to a Biggie song the other day. And at the end... Yeah, it was Big Pop, because at the end, Diddy comes on and he's like, tell your friends to get with my friend. And I was like, ugh. Oh, God.
Tell everybody to get in a room together.
Tell your friends not to get with Diddy's friends and not to go to his house and not to get the baby oil, not to do any of that stuff. Tell your friends to stay away from his friends and that nobody has to be friends is what I was thinking with that. But I definitely think that if Biggie and Tupac were still alive, that changes the career of Jay-Z. That could change the career of like Nas and guys like that, big pop rappers who would still have been sort of under their shadow and in the shadow of those guys. I think that definitely would have been the case. I'm trying to think other 90s rappers that would have affected, but Jay-Z's the one who springs
to
mind.
Well, I have a question for you, Arcan. If Biggie and Pac are never murdered, so most people, Andy, you ask them, who are the best rappers? Tupac and Biggie.
Eminem.
Everyone said, I agree with that, but for the most part.
I think Cool G Rap, but anyway, go on.
That's a real backpacker answer.
Yes, it is.
Are Biggie and Pac considered the best rappers if they never die? Because I do think that them passing played a huge part in their legacies.
I think both of them would have had tough second halves. I think that Tupac was already sort of going down a path of this like artsy fartsy kind of stuff, and he would have been in movies and things like that, but I'm not sure that he would have still been considered a great rapper after all of that. He was already on track to be, you know, he was in Poetic Justice and what was the movie where he was Bishop?
Above the Rim.
No.
Oh, Juice.
Juice, yeah, right. I was trying to say, but I was about to say Boys in the Hood. He was in Above the Rim too, right?
Yeah.
The brother of the security guard.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, he was already sort of on that path. Biggie, on the other hand, you could already sort of tell. I mean, unless he broke away from Puffy, Puffy was doing all those remakes of old songs and stuff. And I think Biggie, if he got wrapped up into that, that would have hurt him. And not because he's not talented or anything. I prefer him to Tupac. But that would have been problematic in the greatest conversations because, you know, Nas had a great debut album and people still consider him an all-time great. But it wasn't like a cutoff after that. He had some duds afterwards, and you know, the big beef with Jay-Z and everything sort of brought him back up. But like, I think that in general, there would have been a much different trajectory for a lot of people. And if Biggie and Tupac had not passed away so young, then they probably would have gone through the same late career rapper steps that everyone goes through, where you suddenly become lame and the next generation comes up and that's it. I think that would have happened to them. It happens to everybody.
So the text line said they co-host the Olympics with Snoop.
True. You never know.
So do you think they were selling out, going mainstream? Is that what you're alluding to, kind of?
I think I don't know about mainstream. I think Tupac already was kind of mainstream.
No, but I mean, you make it sound like you didn't care for him going into movies in that world.
No, I like those movies.
He was good. He was good. I could see him getting an Oscar.
He was a good actor. I mean, I thought he was a good actor.
See, that's a good one. He would have won an Oscar.
Could have won an Oscar.
Could have.
But would he still be considered the greatest rapper of all time?
I don't know about that.
I think when you die young, it inflates your legacy.
100%.
Like, I think, not to switch talk, like the Hernandez thing, I think people make Hernandez out to be a little bit more than he was.
As a player?
Yeah. Gronk was a GOAT
good player.
He was a good player. People pretend that they were on an equal playing field.
I would like to know that, because I've been wondering this, watching this Hernandez show. Was Hernandez as good as or better than Rob Gronkowski?
Get the F out of here.
Okay.
He wasn't. Better is the most disrespectful thing you could ever say, and he wasn't as good as. He was a different type of player. He's more of a slot receiver than a true tight end like Gronk was. But no, he was good. Gronk was generationally great, all-time great.
Because Edelman said himself on the podcast, if that stuff never happens with Hernandez,
100%.
Like, things could have been way different.
They were pushing Welker out. They were pushing Welker out. They were pushing Edelman down. You watch drills, and when they broke up into passing drills, Welker and Hernandez were in the same line. Like, they were slot receivers, the same positional grouping. Gronk's a tight end, a beast, an inline guy, a blocker. I just think, like, even Bill O'Brien said Gronk's the greatest of all time. He was on Edelman's podcast. And the duo might have been the best duo of all time. I'll listen to that because I think they have very different skills. But Hernandez was more a Travis Kelce. He was a Travis Kelce type, and you know I push back against him as a tight end and his greatness. He's a stat accumulator, a pass catcher. He also, and I'll stand by this to the day, always cut to the inside. I don't know how everybody fell for it. He would catch a pass out of the slot and always cut to the inside. And I'm like, if I know this, how can you jackasses let him do it every time he catches a pass? He goes to the inside and you let him get extra yards.
Well, if not, he'd kill them. So.
Now you've threatened them. Good point.
Speaking of Aaron Hernandez, little WEEI shout out last night.
Huh? Yeah, that was funny. Which and
got
I think
some WEEI
that they,
love on
yes,
FX,
and they go back to my point that, and let me be fully transparent, that I think that that information would have came out no matter what. But I believe that that information of him being gay played a big part in his unaliving.
It's that was if you
That's
haven't
what you're
seen
supposed
it
to call
yet,
it,
right? Yeah, if you haven't seen it yet, but that was pretty much the thing that in the show. Right? I mean,
So
you both believe it. Well, I think it had something to do with it. I think the show really went over the top trying to explain away all the evil stuff he did because he was not okay with being gay. You know, I just feel like that was a very convenient way to sort of excuse a lot of stuff.
Well, everything.
Implies
they layered
that he was like a good guy in this, you know, the heart of gold, but then all of a sudden, you know, he had a problem with being gay and not wanting to be out in front of his teammates. So that's why he started smoking angel dust on the way to practice. Like, he was kind of off the rails before any of that happened. And I think that my main complaint with the show is that I feel like they put it all on the gay thing. And that's, I don't know, something seems like less than right with that to me.
I think he may have been a punk. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like some
no,
of those kids that are they're
punk,
just punks.
Yeah.
Definitely some of that. But I also don't know that I agree that they put it all on the gay thing, as you said. They started with the molestation thing,
right,
where like
true.
The birthday party. They kept leading you down the CTE road.
There's a whole
road.
Scene with the lawyer about that. You'll see when you see the
I
finale,
just think they tried to layer the reasons that all either individually could have pushed him in a certain direction or maybe as a compilation, right? Pushed him in a certain direction. All these issues finally broke him. And there's probably some truth to that. There's probably some truth that all those various things in some way caused him to snap. I also think Stiz is right. I think there was also just he was a punk.
Yeah.
And maybe those are sort of excuses or whatever. And there's other people that are punks that don't do that. They're just punks. They don't murder people.
Texter in the 401 says, if Tupac doesn't die, Will Smith doesn't slap Chris Rock. That's probably true.
Oh, my God. Talk about
probably
a butterfly
true.
Effect.
There's your butterfly
That's a
effect
good one.
Right there.
Can I get an explanation on that? What the hell does that mean?
Because Tupac and Jada Pinkett Smith were a thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, well, before she was Jada Pinkett Smith, obviously. But when she was just Jada Pinkett, her and Tupac
were... she's been a thing with... Or is it a different
little list? Yeah. You know
well, supposedly, like Tupac was like her true love,
yeah. And that she said that. Recently,
yes, yeah, recently.
She's a terrible wife.
Along with banging his friend's kids. Yeah,
yeah, her
She's
kids.
A terrible
her kids'
wife.
Friends. That's what it is. Yeah.
Surprised he hasn't gone off the rails more.
I mean, no, he went on a talk show and
Chris Rock in the middle of the Oscars.
Yeah, but that's not really off the rails.
It kind of is. I mean, it's not like Hernandez off the rails, but it's certainly. And who knows how great of a husband he is either. Anyway, that is What If Wednesday.
I like it. This is going to be fun.
As we go behind the glass in the 5 o'clock hour. We'll return with Odds and Ends next. Odds and Ends brought to you by Cars for Kids, the easiest way to get rid of your old car. Donate today. Your car can be picked up tomorrow. Donate now at carsforkids.com. That's cars with a K and the number 4. What do you got today, Andy?
So, it's odds and it's ends. We've been doing a lot of ends. We haven't had a lot of odds lately. I'm very interested in odds. Gullible Andy, you've called me gullible.
Yes, I have.
A lot of Twitch chatters have called me gullible because of my faith in the Red Sox to do something interesting. There's another.
John Lyons is holding up a sign that says you're gullible.
Son of a bitch. You son of a bitch.
Anyway.
Another reason I'm gullible is I'm really looking forward to 11 p.m. on Friday night. Mm-hmm. When the Tyson-Paul fight is on Netflix, or at least when it's scheduled. So I went to my FanDuel app, and because I'm going to be betting on Mike Tyson, just an FYI.
Okay.
Right now, plus 178. That's up from plus 170. I want the juice to get a little nicer for me.
Tyson's plus 178?
Yes.
What's Paul?
Minus 220.
Minus 220. Interesting.
Isn't that in line with what you believe?
It is, yeah. I'm surprised that that's what the betting odds are.
So,
I figured all the money would be coming in on Tyson.
We would, but you seem so strong, so you can't be the only person in the world that seems so strongly opinionated that Paul's going to win, that this is a setup.
Right, but I think that most people are stupid, and that they're just going to see Mike Tyson, and they're going to go, Tyson, let's bet
like
on
me,
him.
I'm
right,
stupid.
Exactly.
I listened to him with Jim Gray and Bill Belichick. He said he doesn't want to beat Paul, he wants to hurt him, and he's ready to do that. 2-minute rounds, 8 of them, so that's the setup here.
It's hard to hurt somebody in a 2-minute round.
Not if you're Iron Mike. You ever see that guy punch?
Yeah.
40 years ago.
No. Watch some of the clips recently. Watch some of the workouts recently. He's going to destroy him. So, I don't know. They don't seem to think that Mike Tyson can win a decision, because points or decision is plus 1,100 for Mike Tyson.
Okay.
Plus 250 if you go knockout or TKO for Mike Tyson.
Well, so they do think it'll be a decision if he wins.
No. But go to a decision. Go to a, like, on right. the card, on the points. You know what I mean? Like, so, unanimous. We've gone to our three judges, and
it's plus 110 for him to win by decision, and it's plus 250 for him to win by knockout.
It's plus 1,100.
Oh, 1,100. I'm sorry.
There's a zero missing.
That's not bad. That could be sneaky good.
They clearly don't think he's going to make it eight rounds.
I think
getting all the juice there.
I think a lot of these years old. I think a lot of these are like, all right, listen, let's just kind of, you know, go back and forth.
But they
get it to decision, and then
what's Paul by draw?
Paul decision is plus 270. Paul knockout TKO is plus 140.
Plus 270 to win by decision.
One that I kind of like.
I don't think anyone's getting knocked out on Friday.
No way.
Yeah.
Jake Paul to win and both fighters to be knocked down. So if you think it's kind of fixed and it's kind of a show,
right?
Wouldn't they both go down at some point and Jake Paul wins? That's plus 490.
Okay.
I don't hate that. You don't like any of this, do you?
No, I'm just thinking about it. Paul wins, plus 490. They both get knocked down.
At some point.
Kind of feel like if Tyson gets knocked down, he's staying down.
You know? I think you think he's more of a geriatric than he is.
I think he's 58.
No, he's fine.
He's 58 years old.
I heard him the other day.
And he just had like a stroke or something, didn't he?
Didn't they delay the fight?
They did because he had a stroke?
Yeah.
Like,
medical
come on.
Incident.
This is a guy.
Medical incident.
Okay, but I'm saying
he had turf toe.
He's 58 with a medical incident. Come on.
He just.
What are we talking about?
It lasted more than 4 hours. That was the incident. He went to the doctors. Now he's ready to fight.
Did you see that video of when that guy was messing with him on the plane and he just whooped the guy's ass on the plane? That was funny. If he was fighting that guy, I'd say Tyson. I bet Tyson all the way.
I'm telling you, he's going to win. He is going to win this fight.
Jake Paul just beat up Nate Diaz long ago.
It's Mike Tyson.
Yeah, that was impressive.
Yeah,
Nate Diaz is
20 years younger than Mike Tyson.
Age is just a number.
It is not just a number.
It is
though
just
Nate
a number.
Isn't
oh, really?
A boxer.
Three old guys all talking about how age is just a number? That's funny.
The 58-year-old, the 65-year-old, and the 72-year-old all agreed that age is just a number and people shouldn't worry about it.
Do you remember Jose Canseco getting knocked out by whoever that kid was, that kid from Barstool?
He had a shoulder injury.
So Mike Tyson had a stroke. Come on.
Are you sure it was a stroke?
No, I'm not. I'm actually not. I keep yelling that, but I don't know exactly what it was. I know it was enough that they had to delay the fight. Let me see if I can find out exactly what it was. It probably wasn't a stroke.
A medical
you can't have a guy fight after he had a stroke.
I don't think anybody would clear that, even at AT&T Stadium in Dallas.
There's a lot of money on the line, so I don't know.
No, but there's also a lot of money on the line if you let a guy with a stroke go to the ring.
Medical emergency. Tyson suffered an ulcer flare-up that led to the fight being postponed. For details about the medical emergency, it began during a flight.
He needed some Pepto.
Tyson became nauseous and dizzy 30 minutes later, 30 minutes before landing. He went to the bathroom, threw up blood, and defecated tar, according to Google.
Well, if you defecate tar, doesn't that usually mean you took like Imodium? That makes your poop black.
Yeah, I think Paul's going to beat the tar out of him, unfortunately.
So, am I the only one who's excited about this?
I'm going to watch.
I'm pretty happy about it.
I'm mad because I know I'm going to get suckered in again. It's like it's Mike Tyson fighting. I'm going to watch it.
Yes.
It's free. I don't have to pay for it.
Right.
But I know after it's done, I'm going to be like, that was such a waste of time.
Okay, and then you go to bed.
Like we said, you know, there's the chance.
Mm-hmm. And that's
there
what we're all looking for in life.
That's
just that chance.
Wild.
That hope, that juice, and we're going to have that at 11 p.m. on Friday night.
All right, we'll keep you up to speed on what these betting odds are over the course of the week. The fight is Friday night on Netflix. That's all the time we have here. We're out of here. John Lyons and KJ, I believe, right? Yes, Lyons and KJ coming up next. They will have you for the duration of the evening, going until 10 o'clock. Hart and I will be back tomorrow at 2. We'll talk to you then right here on WEEI.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all The Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.